Welcome, listeners, to Time for an Awakening on Black Talk Radio Network, new media for the new millennia. This is a history and current events program from a cultural perspective. We find this program necessary because Hosea 4:6 states, "My people are destroyed for the lack of knowledge." But we as a people can turn this around. Proverbs 4:7 states, "Wisdom is the principal thing. Therefore, get wisdom. And with all that getting, get an understanding." Again, welcome to the program this evening with your hosts, Brother Elliot and Brother Richard. The number to reach us to join the conversation this evening is 215-490-9832. That's 215-490-9832. We're streaming live at several locations. You can go to timeforanawakening.com, which is the homepage, and listen to the live stream from that location. You can go to www.blacktalkradionetwork.com/timeforanawakening. Again, that's www.blacktalkradionetwork.com/timeforanawakening and listen to the live stream there also. You can go to ourradionetwork.com/timeforanawakening. Again, that's ourradionetwork.com/timeforanawakening and pick up the live stream from that location also. Or you can download TuneIn to any of your handheld devices. TuneIn is a free app. And in that TuneIn search engine, just type in Time for an Awakening, and you can listen to the live stream. And you can stream it even into your car if you have the auxiliary connection. Again, that's Time for Awakening radio program with the live stream on the TuneIn app. Drop us an email at timeforanawakening@gmail.com. That's timeforanawakening@gmail.com. Time for Awakening also has a fan page on Facebook. In that Facebook search engine, just type in Time for an Awakening radio program. There you always see interesting content being posted daily. And before you leave that page, do me a favor and hit that like button. That's Time for an Awakening radio program with the fan page on Facebook and Time for Awakening Media. Home base, the home page is there. Making some changes, there are changes going on as we speak. We're going to add some pages for some of the other programs so they can download their content. And other interesting articles and podcasts of the programs that you can download, share with your friends, and listen at a later time. Again, make that one of your favorites. Put that in your address bar. That's timeforanawakening.com. Timeforanawakening.com will take you straight to Time for an Awakening Media. Again, making some changes to the homepage website to add in the other programs that we have so they can add in their content. Other changes will be made to the site because we're adding new programs. I know in February, December, we were pushing it to add two in December, but it looks like they'll be added in January. So there'll be changes coming not only to the website, but to Time for an Awakening Media. We had a little problem with the opening music, but there's no problem because we always keep it moving on Time for an Awakening. We'll be right back to get things started. Friday, we usually have a Friday open forum, and we'll probably still do that a little later on. But first, we're going to hear from Sister Ife Fatu about the fourth annual Wake Up, Rise Up Sisters Women's Conference being held in Baltimore, Maryland tomorrow, which is Saturday, December 9th, from 12 noon to 7 p.m. We'll be right back to hear from Sister Ife after a brief word from our sponsors.
Moderator, our distinguished guests, brothers and sisters, our friends and our enemies. Everybody is here.
You are listening to Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasts or live programming, hit them up at timeforanawakening.com.
All Insurance Incorporated, an African-American owned and operated insurance agency in business for over 20 years, located at 231 Southeastern Road in Glenside, PA, with other offices in Germantown and West Philadelphia. Call now for commercial insurance quotes, homeowners insurance quotes, automobile insurance quotes, notary and tax services, representing over 15 major A-rated insurance companies, offering a discount on all notary services if when you call in for a free quote. Call this number, 215-885-2444. That number is 215-885-2444. 215-885-2444. All Insurance Incorporated.
Before your roof becomes unruly, call Dooley. Dooley Brothers, specializing in shingle, rubber roofs, gutters, downspouts, and vinyl sidings. Call for your free estimate today. 215-224-3882. That's 215-224-3882. Dooley Brothers Roofing, the roofing experts you can trust. That number again, 215-224-3882. 215-224-3882. Before your roof becomes unruly, call Dooley.
Overworked? Suffering with an underperforming company, headache customer, staff, or vendors? Or are you a startup who wants to get it right the first time and avoid the costly mistakes? We turned a $24,000 a year odd job handyman service into a seven-figure high-end custom home builder and commercial contractor licensed and operating in three states. This is just one transformation created for entrepreneurs like you in various industries around the country. Not what you're used to from accounting and business consulting? Well, welcome to New Business Solutions. If you're ready to go beyond advising, coaching, and training and get implemented results, call 301-244-9072. Let New Business Solutions apply the best comprehensive administrative, accounting, operations, human resources, management, sales, and marketing to help you actualize your vision for yourself and your company. From anywhere nationally, call 301-244-9072. Spelled new as in numerous on your device right now. Book your free consultation at newbusinesssolutions.com.
History is a clock that people use to tell their political and cultural time of day. It is also a compass that people use to find themselves on the map of human geography. History tells of people where they have been and what they have been, where they are and what they are. Most important, history tells a people where they still must go, what they still must be. The relationship of history to the people is the same as the relationship of a mother to her child.
From antiquity to the present, our people need to develop a new paradigm. It's time for an awakening with your host, Brother Elliot. Sundays, 7 p.m., Fridays at 8 p.m. For podcasting or live program scheduling, hit us up at timeforanawakening@gmail.com. Welcome back to Time for an Awakening. And before we get started with our program this evening, I want to welcome in my co-host, Philadelphia activist and tour guide at the African American Museum at 7th and Arch Street here in Philadelphia. Brother Richard is with us. Brother Richard.
Yes, sir, brother.
How are you,
sir? How you doing there?
I'm doing great, man. Guess I'm getting ready for this snow we're supposed to have here in the city of Philadelphia.
Uh-oh. Snow.
Yeah, well, I guess you didn't hear it. Well, they're talking about 4 to 5 inches or something like that. No, 3 to 5 inches.
Uh-oh. So, that's boots, more coats.
Yeah, I know it. For you, you're going batting down the hatches.
I don't know. Well, it's all good. Let's get it on. Let's get it over with. Yeah.
Yeah, looking forward to our conversation this evening with Sister Aife and talking about the Wake Up, Rise Up Women's Conference down there, the 4th annual Women's Conference in Baltimore. I know you met her husband at the Lux Conference, and we plan to get him or probably both of them on a little bit later, probably in January, to talk about some of the things that you discussed with her husband at the Locks Conference.
Yeah, and both, what I see is that it's definitely a family warrior affair in development. So I think it's definitely something that we should all become informed of what's going on in Baltimore, that we can be able to get some practices and understanding from to implement in cities around the country.
I agree. Before we bring in our guests, I just want to state again the African Independence Day Organization Committee and Urban Shaman Productions presents the second annual Buy Black Marketplace and Pre-Kwanzaa celebration. It's Saturday, December 23rd, 2017. At the historic Church of the Advocate at 1801 Diamond Street here in Philadelphia. The admission is $5 at the door. Children are admitted absolutely free. Special guest performances, speakers, the ceremonial lighting of the Kanara. Vendors are always needed. For more information, if you're interested in vending, three ways you can contact. You can email them at africanindependenceday.com AfricanIndependenceDay@gmail.com. Again, that's AfricanIndependenceDay@gmail.com. You can drop them a line from the website. You can go to the website at AfricanIndependenceDay.org. Again, that's AfricanIndependenceDay.org. Or you can give them a call at 267-521-1544. Again, that's 267-521-1544. That's the second annual Buy Black Marketplace and Pre-Kwanzaa celebration. Saturday, December 23rd, 2017, at the historic Church of the Advocate, 1801 Diamond Street, here in Philadelphia. The admission is $5 at the door, but the children are absolutely free. Tonight, I want to welcome in our special guest, Sister Aife Fatu, is with us this evening to talk about the Wake Up, Rise Up Sisters' fourth annual women's conference in Baltimore, Maryland. Sister Aife, how are you?
I'm well. How about yourself?
I'm doing great. I'd like to welcome you to Time for Awakening. Myself and Brother Richard are here.
How you doing, Sister?
I'm well. I would like to first, before I go any further, give thanks to Netzer for this opportunity to live another day and be able to do the good work for my people. And then next, I would like to give thanks to you all for inviting me in. I appreciate it.
Oh, no problem. We always want to know about things going on all over the country that's going to change the paradigm and change the way our people think, both men and women, towards our people in general and towards our families in particular. Sister Aife, talk about the Wake Up, Rise Up Sisters conference. It's the fourth annual, from what I understand. Before you talk about the conference tomorrow, talk about what got you to really start this up. I know it's the fourth annual, so give us a little genesis of the women's conference that you hold in Baltimore.
Sure. I had did a lecture back in 2013, and I did a lecture titled African Womanhood, Then and Now, Wake Up and Rise Up Sisters. And that was my first time doing a lecture in some years. I had just gave birth to my oldest son, and he was a few months old, and I just felt like I needed to be back in the forefront. Now, I'm doing a lot behind the scenes. I'm in an organization with my husband called PLM, Pan-African Liberation Movement. So we do a lot of organizing, and I do a lot of in-house stuff because we also operate a study class every Sunday called African Awareness and Critical Thinking Study Class. So it's men and women and teenagers coming in there. So I'm always doing something with those women, and we do monthly workshops and we do healing circles. So in terms of me going back on a lecture circuit, I wasn't doing that. And I just felt like I needed to be doing that again. I personally had an awakening. I personally felt like I should be doing more. Yes, from the outside looking in, a person may say she's doing a lot. And I am doing multiple things, but I felt like I had more talent and skills that I was sitting on that I should be utilizing. So I decided to get back on a lecture circuit. So it was an awakening for me, just studying my culture, allowing my culture to do what it's supposed to do, which is cultivate me, which is to enlighten me, which is to assist me in being a better woman. So with that being said, I did the lecture talking about womanhood, and I talked about how the ancient Kemetic women were in their time, the leadership skills they had, the, how they was advocates for their people, advocates for Africa. And I talked about the different attributes of them, and I gave a thorough description of those women in that time and then a description of the women today. Now, back then, we was very much active. We was not lazy people. And I'm speaking in general. I'm not saying African people are lazy or African women are lazy, but I know we're not tapping into our power, and there's much more we can do. So I was asking other women to wake up with me. Like, women, we need to realize this, and women, we need to get more involved. And not only realize that as a people, we can do more to assist us and get us out of the mess that we in, to fight our way out of this oppressive state. But also, it was saying, women, you got to know your power. We are powerful people in general, and then particularly women. When we lead, when we awaken ourselves, the men and the children will follow. And we are an example, and we are the key to aiding us in getting out of this mess. So I went from there to, I asked the women, how would they, that was at that particular lecture, how did they feel about us meeting up after the lecture? And everybody was like, yeah, let's do it. I'm with it. All of the women hands in the audience, they had raised it. And my intentions was to meet with them. This was in August 2013. My intentions was to meet with them that following month, but my oldest sister had transitioned. So that kind of put a brakes on that. But as opposed to just losing the momentum with the women, I created a Facebook group, a private group called Wake Up and Rise Up Sisters. And I would post inspirational messages. I would just post about other African women from ancient time, from modern time, to, you know, whatever that I felt like they needed to know about, that can encourage them, that can inspire them. And then I will also post different things about our health and different things we can be made aware of to make the necessary changes in our life. We went from there to doing a conference that following year. And then we just been doing conferences. So in addition to the conference that I've been doing every year, I also do workshops. So I do the workshops with the women at our study class, and then I also open it to the general public to come and talk about whatever's on their mind, what's on their spirit, or guide them in Kemetic spirituality, or bring in a guest speaker to teach us a skill.
Sister Aifa, the conference Saturday, it's 12 to 7 p.m. Talk about some of the things that will be featured at the conference. I know that that you're opening the door for the women to bring their children also. Is that male and female children, or just the young ladies?
It's just for teenage girls.
Good.
So
okay.
It's for ages as young as 13. So I'm actually asking women to not bring their children unless their child is in a workshop, old enough for a workshop.
Good.
So
okay.
The cost for the women is $50. The cost for the teenage girls is $40. And this is the first year that we're bringing in the girls. So this is a little different. Typically, I am doing a workshop, several workshops, and then I invite in a couple other, one to two other women. So this is also the first year that we have an elder with us, and that is Mama Akoswa from Philly that organizes the Philly Life Conference.
Okay.
So she is one of the people that's doing a workshop. She actually is doing two workshops with the women.
Okay. Talk about some of the workshops, some of the things that will be covered.
Sure. One of the workshops Sister Harmony is doing is the power of Persian. So she's actually, all of her workshops is geared towards the teens. And she is going to deal with the women, the young girls, purging whatever impurities, toxicity is within them. And being as though she's going to actually be purging there and having them to engage in purging is more so a spiritual and a mental purge. And then also guiding those young sisters of how they can continue to purge afterwards, because we don't want to just do a lot of talking there. We want to give them steps. We want to give them keys and techniques that they can utilize after they leave. So she's going to focus on the diet and also what they watch, what they listen to, and how to purge that stuff out and how all of that affects our mind and our spirit. She's also going to discuss relating and relationships. So that's the topic of it, relating and relationships. And that's going to help the young girls talk about how they interact with other people, how they socialize with other girls, and particularly young boys, and how they can relate to them better from an African-centered perspective, as well as eventually we will get to the topic of intercourse with the young girls, this day and age, our young girls are, you know, sexually active.
Yes.
As teenagers. So we definitely want to discuss that with the young girls as well. Another topic that she has, and forgive me, I'm looking at my notes right now of another one of her topics. But as I'm doing that, I can give you one of my topics, which is I'm doing a welcoming statement, and it's about rules. So to give them the history for those that's new to the whole movement, that maybe never been to any of our conferences or workshops, maybe never even picked up my book that gives a thorough breakdown of what Wake Up and Rise Up is about. So I'm going to break that down to them and give some examples. And then we also going to allocate time to allow the women to talk about what's on their mind and their spirit and discuss the power of praying in that workshop.
Go ahead.
Mama Okosua's topics are, give me 1 second, Divine Beauty from Within and What's Eating You. So she's going to focus on, in terms of what's eating you, not just what we're, again, that's like another, that's a play on words, and that's talking about what is affecting our spirit, what is affecting our mind. I believe that's the angle she's coming from with that workshop. And everybody that's doing a workshop is going to give handouts to the women so they can leave. And for those that's so engaged in the workshops and not a fast note taker, they have notes to go home with, and they can reflect on things and know how to apply these things, not just discuss them. So that's our main focus of building up our women mentally, physically, and spiritually. We have a comedic yoga, well, Egyptian yoga workshop. So we're not just doing yoga with the women, but we're making that connection to our culture and giving them the names of these yoga moves from an African perspective that they can also, and this is for all levels, you know, whether a person called themselves a yogi or they never did yoga before, they can engage in this workshop. And they can do these moves at home, as well as the breathing techniques that the Sister Kekni will have us doing, so these women know how to accurately breathe. And it's funny to most people maybe to hear accurately breathe, because whoever's alive is breathing. However, we're not breathing properly. And we lost our way of how to breathe properly, and we're not allowing that energy that to flow through us, to flow through us, and allowing that impurities to come out our nose as we breathe, as we exhale. So we'll go through that to help the women know how to relax when they find themselves in stressful situations and how to deal with that and calm themselves down and bring themselves back to center, bring back that balance within themselves.
You know, Sister Avery, I want to kind of go back and reflect on some of those topics that you're going to go over with the sisters. But before I do that, I'm going to turn it over to Brother Richard, because you don't know this, Sister Avery, but you're talking to a yogi and Brother Richard.
Okay.
and Brother Richard. He's a, he's
oh
a,
no no no! don't let him fool. Man, I do. You know, when you get up to this this point in age, and I've been involved in a form of practice, and I wanted to be clear, not necessarily a comedic form of practice of yoga. And I know there's thousands of, and I think that we should understand that there's thousands of postures that was made that makes that body, mind, spirit connection. But I wanted to touch with you, Sister Aoife. Your book, is it called Wake Up, Rise Up, Sisters? And what is it about?
My book is titled Wake Up and Rise Up, Sisters, The Voice of a Black Woman. And it's about awakening different aspects of the woman. So the first chapter is called Wake Up and Rise Up, Sisters. So I give a breakdown of what I mean behind that and why do I use that term. So I define what is wake up, and then I define what is rise up. So wake up is pretty much is having an insatiable appetite for growing, for studying, for becoming better, to learn about yourself and your culture, how your culture applies to now, this day and age, how we cannot truly walk in our purpose if we do not connect back to ourselves and center ourselves. So I make that very clear that we got to have that connection to culture and learn about who we are, but just learning in general. So just wanting to grow mentally. And then rise up is applying the information. So I'm definitely not saying to the women that we have to master every single subject that's out there. But what I am saying to the woman, and I'm challenging the woman to do, is to learn as much as she can when she can. So it's about just wanting to constantly grow and not ever, you know, becoming fulfilled on knowledge. You just constantly want to become more knowledgeable and more informed. And that's the desire, particularly as it relates to us as a people, because there's no way you can say, okay, I've been studying African culture for 5 months and I think I know it now. 5 years, I think I know it now. 10 years, whatever. We are behind enemy's lines and we do not have a knowledge of self. We are not growing up within our culture or walking in our culture or speaking in our culture. So this is a protracted endeavor. This is a never-ending endeavor. Constantly learn and then apply. I'm challenging the woman to apply it, and that's to rise up, because we have to be a living testament of all of the good information that we're studying, and without the wonderful benefits of our culture and how our culture can transform us to become better people. We need our culture to live. Mm-hmm.
And that's beautiful, and it leads to, and I'm glad to hear that you're projecting that, and that becomes a value and a lifestyle for women, as we as men you should emulate or mirror. So my question comes to this in relationship to putting on this conference over the last 4 years, and coming from that study group perspective and focusing as you should with women. What have you been learning? What have you been learning from the women that you're engaging by putting on the conference, that it isn't just in the study group itself, but in the process of putting on the conference? What have you learned from the sisters that you realize that for your own growth and development?
Oh, wow. I learned a lot. I definitely learn how to be more patient with us. I'm learning that everybody is growing. It's one thing to say you know something. It's a whole other thing to actually go through it and know it and feel it and have discussions with people and see it firsthand. Because, you know, I'm now knowing how we all grow at different paces and we are all on different levels of consciousness. So just because I understand something or somebody else understands something that, you know, a comrade of mine doesn't necessarily mean all these other women understand it. You got to be able to have patience with the women, and you got to be able to discuss things or explain things in multiple ways and multiple times, because they're not going to always get it that first time. And like I said, a lot of those women that do come to the conference, I do monthly workshops with. So it's a lot of reiterating to the women. And then I just learned how to be softer, if you will, for lack of better words. These women taught me how to tap more into my femininity. Being around a lot of masculine brothers, and that includes my husband, when I first embarked upon this path, I think that had an influence on my behavior and how I interacted with other people, particularly the women. So they taught me how to soften up a little bit and how to be a little bit more patient with my people in general.
Yeah, and the reason why I appreciate that response, and the reason because it's the question of our cultural continuity. You know, as exactly. we look at our ancient culture, like how much do we actually carry, even though people say that we've been assimilated. So with that said, how do you see the women coming into the culture as far as to the organizing, or as I think I heard you in Elliot's question, kind of going on to the next step of making themselves that? How are you moving the conference to actually as a part of the organizing tool for the African Liberation Movement? Is it different?
In terms of
carrying out the actions that would make us African people. And as you said earlier, where women realize as women that they have a very powerful, important role in transforming us from where we are to where we should be. How do you see the conference growing into that?
Okay. If I understand your question correctly, I will say that first, it's different levels of consciousness that attends the workshop. So some of these women I know personally, some I don't, some I study with, some I do not. Some I know is not necessarily studying, as well as the girls, not necessarily studying African culture. Now, my intentions of these people when they attend the conference is to motivate them to stay on this path of wanting to be better and learn more and do better and assist not only cultivating herself, but assist in cultivating her family and her community and not seeing one separate from the other. We all is in this mess together. So there's definitely, I want to emphasize, it's not a feminist movement. It's women acknowledging and identifying with their power within and using their power to work jointly with the men and getting us out of the mess that we are in. So those women, I encourage them to come to our study class afterwards, our study class that's every Sunday, to come there and to stay connected, to join an organization. That's always like the underlying theme of everything that I do, get more involved, join an organization, a progressive organization. That's out here fighting for African people. So I don't want them to just come to the conference and just feel good and just go home and like, oh, that was a good conference, and then go back to that normal life. I'm hoping that this would transform them in such a way that it would inspire them to want to do more, even if it's not with necessarily PLM, but with an organization where we meet again next year at the conference, and the conference continue to grow, and there's women from each state coming to be here with us to heal, to grow, to purge, and go back to their families feeling renewed.
And I appreciate that you did understand my question.
Okay.
Yeah, thank you.
So, Aoife, two of the things that I noticed that you mentioned, and first I want to say that I'm a big advocate personally, myself and Brother Richard, talk about the need for think tanks in all of these areas, be it urban or rural areas where our people live at. They need think tanks. Critical thinking is very important for our people. I think the advent of religious faiths have kind of dumbed our people down. And I'm not saying that to be insulting. I'm saying that as a reality. I think that the need for critical thinking is very important. It's a skill that we need to develop, especially in our children. So when you're talking about sessions that you have on the weekend to talk about critical thinking, I want to applaud you in that, because the need for think tanks in all of these areas where we live, like I said, be it urban or rural, is necessary. When you talked about at the conference, talking about purging with the women and young ladies that will be there and relationships. First, the purging. Being that we have been so removed from our culture, I think that people have adopted ways to function in this society, and our diet was one of the ways that we adopted. We adopted the eating of pork, bad things that were detrimental to our bodies. And especially now, with some of our families being fragmented, I came from a family, I'm a little bit older than the average person. I came from a family where we had home-cooked meals. My mother and father were there, and we had to be in at a certain time to eat dinner with everybody. Now some of our young people don't come from those type of households. They eat a lot of fast foods. They eat at a lot of these nasty places in our communities, be it Asian or Dominican places selling all kind of stuff in these places, salt-laden, fat-laden stuff. So the need to teach our people, especially the young ladies, how to eat, how to purge their bodies. Because you see the way that, and I can see the difference in a way that a lot of our young people are, as opposed to when I was a young person. When I was a young person, both young ladies and young men were relatively thin. But now you see a lot of our young people that are headed towards real health and weight problems. And they're not even out of their 20s. They're not even in their 20s. So talk about the need. Before I get to the relationship part, talk about the need that you see that is necessary to teach our women and young ladies, I'm not even going to deal with the men right now, about purging their bodies. Talk about that from your perspective.
It is very, very pertinent. As you already stressed, the visual of where our health is going, how there are a lot of people that's obese, a lot of people that's dealing with different ailments. And it's like we're getting younger and younger with it.
Yes.
People are dying at a very young age of heart attack, of high blood pressure, whatever the case may be, cancer. You know, so a lot of times we associate these things with our family. Our family line is genetics. It's, you know, my grandmother had it, my great-grandmother had this, my aunt had this. And we sum it up with, I'm bound to get it. I'm bound to get these different ailments. I'm supposed to be obese because my mother was obese or is obese, and my grandmother was obese. And that's not the situation. That's not the reality of it. The reality is our parents, and they didn't mean any better. They did the best that they can do, but they passed down bad habits of eating. And then we adopted these habits, and then we are passing it down to our children, as opposed to even those of us that supposed to be awakened to how to eat better, we still passing it down because it's like, okay, well, my mother did it and I'm still here, but you still here, and now you're dealing with all of these different illnesses and because of your diet, and you're not really putting the blame where it belongs. You're looking at it like, I'm supposed to deal with this because my family members have dealt with it. I'm constantly talking to the women amongst me of how to eat better, how to drink better. I do not, and I'm not perfect by far, none of us are, but I'm striving to get better and better every single day. And whenever I'm going through something physically, mentally, emotionally, I have to sit and I have to reflect. What did I consume? What did I have different today? What did I have too much of today? What can I change for tomorrow so I no longer go through this? Currently, I'm doing with the women a 10-day challenge, and that challenge is to eat green. And we're doing it on Facebook, and it's called, and on Instagram, and it's hashtag I eat green, hashtag Rurus, which is the abbreviation for Wake Up and Rise Up Sisters. So each day, the sister has to take a picture of whatever she's consuming, and it has to be something green on it, something that's not overcooked, something that's lightly cooked, or something that is raw, so she can receive all her nutrients. So little by little, these women are getting involved, and these women are making a transformation to be a better woman. And she may not have a diet completely like mine, but we are going through the changes, and she's open. They are open, and that's what I love about it. We are slowly but surely awakening, and we are rising. So we definitely got to know the effects of what we consume on our bodies, you know, not just physically, but spiritually and mentally. We have this brain fog. We have this memory lapse. We got this bad cough. We got this rash. We got this eczema. We got these pains in our body, and we're not really looking at our food. Even the so-called vegans or vegetarians, and I call myself to be a vegan, but even the so-called vegans and vegetarians is not eating the healthiest. So that's something we got to look at, too. A lot of times we're just associating it with meat, and you shouldn't be eating that pork, you shouldn't be eating that beef, and that chicken got all them hormones in it, and you don't know what that animal was going through when they was slaughtered, whatever hormones that was released into their body, that cortisol, that adrenaline, you're now consuming that, and that's going to alter you. Yes, that's all true, and that does play a part, but also you have these vegans and vegetarians that's defining themselves as that, but really are pastatarians, consuming way too much pasta, consuming way too much soy, way too much wheat, way too much sugar, you know. So, and I was one of those people as well. And we're consuming those things, and we have that imbalance. We have its effect going on inside of our body. And we're not realizing how we took all of this other stuff out, but now we want to compensate for what we no longer consume. So now we're eating this fast meat. Now we're eating all this pasta. We're eating all this stuff, and we're not eating enough vegetables. The first three letters of vegan and vegetarian is VEG, which is the first three letters, and vegetables. That means we're supposed to be eating a lot of vegetables, and we're not. We should be drinking a lot of water, and we don't. So we're eating these things, and then we're not even passing it through our bodies and eliminating it the way we should. We're not, you know, to take it somewhere else, but we're not even defecating as often as we should. So now we're filled with all these toxins from all of the different things that we're consuming, and now it's going through the circulation, our circulatory system, and just going through our blood as opposed to being released into the toilet, released out of our mouths and our nose when we take deep breaths, released out of our pores when we go and exercise, because we're not exercising, we're not breathing right, we're not using the bathroom often enough. So now these toxins are stuck in our bodies, and now it got us feeling depressed, you know, not being able to pay attention and being defined as having ADHD. And it just creates all these other things within our bodies, and we just never look at it, the root of the problem. We're just looking at the symptoms.
Sister Aife, the other topic that you said that you, one of the other topics that you said you'll be covering is relationships. I think that a lot of our people now, especially young people, it's a lot of challenges now going on now in this society that we live in among Europeans. The flood of alternative lifestyles, being pushed, and especially with images of black folks and some of the popular folks that produce television and movies touting alternative lifestyles. This stuff is right in our children's faces that wasn't like that in prior generations. So it's other challenges that we face now that really put our people up against it if we want to kind of turn the minds of our people back to things of our ancestors. So when you're dealing with that, when you're dealing with the interracial relationships being pushed on our children, where you don't need a black man, you can deal with a black woman or go to a white man if you want a man. See, it's a lot of different challenges, and I know that you, when I say you, I'm talking about the women involved, are up against it when you try to knock down this wall that's being built. And I don't want to call it a wall, but other things being pushed on our young people. And that's not to say that they're not pushed on the young men. And in fact, I think they're pushed on the young men possibly more. But talk about the challenges of that in dealing with some of the things when you're talking about our young ladies and the images that they see.
It's a huge challenge because not only are we struggling to remind our people, our women, our children, that you can find love amongst us, right, amongst your black men. Black men, good black men do exist. I have one, and I've been with him for 12 and a half years, you know, and I know many personally. So good black men are out there, but a lot of times we lose hope because of the imagery, you know, what we see on TV, what we hear on the radio and in this music, how we see women supposed to dress and act and the type of men that we attract when we dress and act that certain way. And when we imitate that, we're imitating these, you know, these singers, these superstars that's out there. They imitating that type of behavior and they are attracting a certain type of man to them, or boy, grown male, should I say, to them. And then they want to go and say, good men are not out there. Good men do not exist. Good black men do not exist. And they go to somebody outside of their race, or they go to the same gender. And that's something else that we're fighting with, because that's so prevalent right now, wherever you go. And I was listening to Raleigh Mubiruti talk about homosexuality. And he was just saying how we need to, in other words, it's like an infection, and we have to cut ourselves off from the sick. Now, we're not saying that we cannot associate with our brothers and sisters who like the same sex, or even want to date somebody outside of their race, but we got to be careful of our children, of our babies. We got to protect the minds of our youth. Because I got two young warriors, and I'm not rearing my young boys to grow up to like other boys. And I would say that honestly, and I would say that boldly, because no mother in her right mind want to raise her child to do that. Because at a certain point, you know, we're not procreating anymore. We're not with the man and the woman is not together as they are designed to be. So we definitely got to control these images, because they everywhere. They, you know, it's in commercials. It's on even what you would define as being children shows. They showing it everywhere. Mm-hmm. And they are teaching us through their institutions. And that's one, you know, that's one of the institutions, the society. You know, the schools, it's everywhere. So when you are aware of this and you know that you are in an oppressive society that's taking you away from yourself, you have to protect yourself. You have to protect your spirit. You have to protect your children, your offspring. And by doing that is you have to screen everything that they're going to watch, everything that they're going to listen to, and you have to be very cognizant of the type of environment you're taking them in. And you have to do with Baba Imhotep always discussed, we have to insulate ourselves. So we're not going to get to the point, of course, not to isolate ourselves, because we are talking about liberating the minds of our people and fighting for and with our people. But we have to cut ourselves off and create an environment in terms of where we live and where we mostly interact and where we're going to rear our children, create an environment to protect their mind and their spirit. And for those that's really talking about African liberation and African sovereignty, this is the level we have to think on, and this is the level that we have to walk on to be on.
We're in conversation with Sister Aife Fatu. The Wake Up, Rise Up Sisters 2017 Women's Conference, the fourth annual Women's Conference, will be held in Baltimore, Maryland, tomorrow. I'll get you to give out that location, Sister Aife. It's December 9th, which is Saturday, 12 noon to 7 p.m. We're going to take a brief break shortly. Sister Aife, you still got a few minutes to stay with us?
Yeah, I have a few minutes.
Good. Before we take a break, let me ask you, because I want you to explain this to the listening audience, because you mentioned it earlier, but I kind of want you to really drive it home, because we see now I wouldn't say the advent, because it's been around a while, white women with these feminist groups and some black women latch on to it, and they approach this feminist thing from a Eurocentric view. And when I say Eurocentric, you know, I don't need a man. Women are strong. We can do this ourselves. That type of independence thing without a man is not looking at it from an African-centered point of view. You mentioned when you talked about the Wake Up, Rise Up Sisters is not a feminist organization. I think that's how you worded it. Talk about it. Talk about the difference from your view of being an African sister.
From my understanding of being African-centered, I'm going to start there. The women were concertedly with the men. We was right by the men's side. The men was right by our side. It wasn't one above the other. It wasn't one was more important than the other. We each had our roles. And sometimes the women, because when I talk to people, a lot of times we're looking at things from a European perspective, and we believe that the woman's supposed to, you know, be dainty, and she's supposed to just take care of the children, and, you know, these sexist roles. You know, she's supposed to cook and clean. She's not a fighter, things of that nature. When we're talking about African women, these women were warriors. These women went to war when they had to, when the men wasn't, or if they needed to be right there and fight with the men. If that's what it took to fight for their freedom, that's what they did. You know, when we talking about Queen Nzinga, and when we talking about Queen Yasantiwa and all these other beautiful queens, warrior queens, we talking about warrior women. So these women worked with the men, and they understood their part, and we was complimentary. You know, we was right there with each other. When you're talking about a feminist movement, you're talking about women who want to be equal with the white man, you know, and not even particularly the black man, with the white man, the people that's keeping us in this oppressive society. It's the European man that's oppressing his own women, and that's oppressing our people and all other people. So they are fighting to be as he is. And then when you have black women that's joining that movement, you have black women to fight to be as the white man, to be seen as the white man in his role in this country. You know, so that's not what we're doing. We definitely are saying black women, we love our black men. Black men are important, but black women need our time to be amongst each other. Women have to nurture each other. Women have to help heal each other. In this society, we so hurt, we so broken, we so confused. We don't even like women. You hear women say, I don't like to be around women. All my friends are men, you know, or I only got one female friend. So we don't want to be around other women. And what is that saying about us? It's saying that we hate ourselves to a mm-hmm. certain extent.
Yes.
You know, the same as you would have a black man or woman who say they don't want to be around black people. It's saying that we hate ourselves. So we're telling these women, like, no, women, we have to be amongst each other. We got to have our time to just hug each other, cry with each other, laugh with each other, and help each other grow to being a woman. And then we go back to our man being the best that we can possibly be and fight alongside of our man for African sovereignty.
We're going to take a brief break, and when we come back, we'll spend a few more minutes with our guest, Sister Aife Fatu. The Wake Up, Rise Up Sisters Women Conference is happening tomorrow, 12 noon to 7 p.m. in Baltimore, Maryland. And you can join the conversation, too, if you want to ask a couple questions before she leaves at 215-490-9832. That's 215-490-9832. We'll be right back.
Tuned in to the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasts and live program scheduling, visit us on the web at blacktalkradionetwork.com.
All Insurance Incorporated, an African-American owned and operated insurance agency and business for over 20 years, located at 231 Southeastern Road in Glenside, PA, with other offices in Germantown and West Philadelphia. Call now for commercial insurance quotes, homeowners insurance quotes, automobile insurance quotes, notary and tax services, representing over 15 major A-rated insurance companies, offering a discount on all notary services when you call in for a free quote. Call this number, 215-885-2444. That number is 215-885-2444. 215-885-2444. All Insurance Incorporated.
Before your roof becomes unruly, call Dooley. Dooley Brothers, specializing in shingle, rubber roofs, gutters, downspouts, and vinyl sidings. Call for your free estimate today. 215-224-3882. That's 215-224-3882. Dooley Brothers Roofing, the roofing experts you can trust. That number again, 215-224-3882. 215-224-3882. Before your roof becomes unruly, call Dooley.
RG Electrical Inspections provides electrical inspections for realtors, licensed electricians, and homeowners. Licensed and insured underwriter, serving Philadelphia and surrounding area. Call today, 484-268-9837.
I transformed a $24,000 a year odd job handyman service into a seven-figure high-end custom home builder and commercial contractor licensed and operating in three states. This is just one of the tangible transformations I've created for entrepreneurs in various industries around the country. If this isn't what you think of when you think of accounting and business consulting, then get ready to take down this invaluable information. Are you an entrepreneur suffering with a stagnating company? Have headache customers, staff, or vendors? Are you rebounding from a loss and need help achieving your unrealized potential? Or are you a startup who wants to get it right the first time and avoid the costly mistakes? Hi, my name is Nataki Kanban. If you're ready to go beyond advising and coaching and get results, then call 301-244-9072. Let New Business Solutions recommend and implement the best comprehensive sales, administrative, human resources, accounting, and operations to help you grow into your vision for yourself and your company. Again, from anywhere nationally, call 301-244-9072 or pull us up on your device right now and book your free consultation at www.newbusinesssolutions.com. And just mention you heard this special announcement on Time for an Awakening.
darkness no longer, a child is born. Mothers shed tears of joy as baby tests his lungs. My daddy's not there where he ought to be. Somewhere in Georgia, skinning and shooting craps on his knees. Another victim born out here in the hood. And based on statistics, it really ain't all good. Welfare takes the tab, and daddy can't sign. And it can't be seen, the family becomes a crime. The hunt is on, and brother, you're the prey. Serving time in jail, it just ain't the way. I'm living so hard, baby, that my hair's gray. We got to make a change, it's a brand new day.
A new world order, a brand new day.
It's a new day.
A change of mind for the human race.
It's
a new
day.
World order, a brand new day.
A
change of mind for the human race.
Operation in flux, and it's on the way. We just marched a million plus the other day. Look, look, we all witnessed the swift rolling down Miss Liberty's head. She knows the sleeping giant, she's no longer sleeping dead. Oh, what a fulfillment of prophecy. Let us teach the children freedom's never been free. It's okay to cry, go ahead and cry. Jesus wept, but hope and faith be kept. It's a new day.
New world order, a brand new day.
It's
a change of mind for the human race.
It's
a new world order, a brand new day.
It's
a change of mind for the human race.
The die has been cast, and there's no need to fear. Cause people, the answer to your prayers are here. Sister Mary, don't you weep. Tell mother not to moan. We need the love, and daddy's coming home. There's no need to worry. The times dictate a plan. Mother Earth's given birth to a brand new man. Sister, I know you're misunderstood. But hold on to your man. Cause the future looks good. It's a new day.
A new world order. A brand new day.
It's a new day.
Welcome back to Time for an Awakening. We're in conversation this evening. Well, we're going into open forum very soon, but we're in conversation this evening with Sister Aife Fatu, the Wake Up, Rise Up Sister. Sisters 2017 Women's Conference. It's the fourth annual Women's Conference being held in Baltimore, Maryland, tomorrow, which is December 9th from 12 noon to 7 p.m. Sister Aife, give out that location of the conference for our listening audience.
Sure. It's going to be at the Center for Urban Families on North Monroe Street. It's actually no pen at the door, so and pre-register, and I'm still taking people tonight. If anybody is interested in attending, they can call me at 443-839-6926 or text me or inbox me on Facebook. And like I said, we're still taking people. A couple, we got a spot for a couple more women.
If I'm
Go ahead,
I just wanted to ask Sister Aife to repeat the book that you have, so that just in case for those of us who may not, women who may not be able to, you know, we couldn't attend, and those who could are not able to attend, they can further get your views from that book. The title again.
Sure. The name of the book is "Wake Up and Rise Up, Sisters: The Voice of a Black Woman." The cost of the book is $12. They can contact me personally, again, at 443-839-6926 to purchase that book, or they can email me at ifefatio@gmail.com or inbox me on Facebook, either way. Now, if they can get in contact with me personally, they can always go on Amazon, get the book, if they located in Baltimore, Maryland, they can go to Everyone's Place. They can go to Flourish Boutique. Or if they are in Atlanta, they can go to Walimu Baruti. When he's vending, he also vends my book.
Sister Aife, sessions that you have on the weekend, and I know it's a lot of young people that attend, I think that in all of these cities, we need to develop structures where we have alternative schooling, especially if we don't have independent black schools already started or African-centered black schools, that we need to develop structures to have independent or alternative schooling even on the weekends. You talked about some of the weekend classes that you have, the critical thinking classes for young ladies and grown women. Talk about the attendance. How's it being received, especially with our younger people?
Oh, Sunday's study class, African Awareness and Critical Thinking study class, is for men, women, and children.
Oh, okay.
Particularly teenagers up until, adulthood. We have elders that attend our class. We have college graduates that attend our class. And we had in the past college professors that had attended our class. And I'm not talking about attended one time and that's it. They came regularly and they learned a lot about themselves and about their culture from attending our study class, which we have been doing since 2007. So, and that's facilitated. We got two different ones. We got one that is from 2 to 4:30. That's facilitated by Brother Kulu. And then we have one from 6 to 9 that is facilitated by Baba Imhotep Fatio. So we have people that have been coming to us for many years and would say and have said that they never learned as much about their culture in any of the institutions that they attended as under the European paradigm. They never learned as much from, as they did from attending our class. So, like I said, that's for adults, and we have stuff for the youth. We have a youth organization called Urban Youth Initiative Project, where within that organization, we have different programs. And one of the programs is particularly for young girls, and that's called the Nzinga Sisterhood. And then we have something that's specifically for young boys, and that's the Zulu Brotherhood. And we have other little programs inside of there that's for children, the young boys and young girls that's a little younger than 13. And we also have a child care center that most people refer to us as a school called Watoto Development Center. And that center is for ages 6 months to 5 years of age. And we teach them about their culture, about their history, and we teach them the basic information about themselves and to prepare them for school, for those that's going to go, whatever institution they go in, whether it's an African-centered one or a European one, whenever they leave us, they are ready to go in there and to learn, and they already know a great deal about themselves and their basic information and can do a lot. Those that stay with us, particularly for a while. So these are the different institutions that we have, in addition to doing a lot of events here in Baltimore.
If I may, is there a social media outreach for those of us who could not be able to be in Baltimore to engage with you or in that learning process?
You talking about for our study class on Sundays?
Yes.
We do not do any live streaming or we do have a Facebook group, and we post every synopsis of the book from time to time or different things about the book that we are currently reading. So I definitely want to emphasize that we study the book and we discuss the book and we answer questions. And then a lot of times Baba Imhotep may have us do a mini lecture on the book. So it's not so much a grand lecture where we're inviting people from all over, but it's a lecture within that classroom on the book or a series of books. So mm-hmm. we're not a book club. We're not just accumulating books and just saying we have books and just coming and sit around, drink tea, and read the book. We're allowing the book to transform us, and our motto is where study meets practice. So we actually want to apply what it is that we're learning that's applicable to today. So we do have a Facebook group called African Awareness and Critical Thinking Study Class, and the acronym for that is X. You may hear us say X sometimes. So they can go on that website, well, that Facebook page, to learn a little bit more about the study class.
Great. Sister Aife, before I let you go, our young people that have, and I'm kind of focusing in on them because that's our future, and that's, as Richard says, that's our natural resource. Talk about the response. And I'm talking about in translation to the classes that you have or what you've observed. Talk about the response of our young people, the stress that they're under before the rebellion behind Freddie Gray and afterwards, seeing what happened to a young man that might be in their age bracket, seeing what the police did to him. How is the response? What are they saying? What are they talking about? How is their mindset? I know it's confusion. It's clear. It's confusion with adults on how to deal in this society. But talk about it from a young people's standpoint, and because you touch the young people's lives all the time, that's you're dealing with them. Talk about how they've been dealing with this.
I have not spoke to any of the teenagers in reference to that. This year is the first year bringing in the children within the conference, and in terms of our youth organization, I no longer facilitate there, but I am a co-founder of Urban Youth Initiative Project. But the people that I have talked to in passing, children and the family, a long time ago when it was, you know, when it actually first occurred, they was afraid. A lot of them was afraid. A lot of them was confused. Their question was, what's next? You know, what's going to happen next? We got to do something. Some of them, a lot of them, was feeling that way. And then you have some that was feeling numb. You know, it's becoming the norm to see these things. It's becoming a norm to hear about a young brother being murdered in or a sister by each other, mm-hmm. particularly, or by the cops.
Okay.
So it's just an everyday thing. When Freddie Gray, when that occurred, a lot of people, as I mentioned before, was afraid and was just was confused, and they was ready. Like, that was like a heightened situation that if any organization was really organizing and prepared to really take advantage of that time frame, that would have been perfect. That would have been ideal. Because a lot of those children, they was angry, and they was confused, and they just needed their emotions to be redirected. They needed clarity for what was going on. So that's what was going on with our young people at that particular time.
Okay. Listen, Sister Aife, I want to thank you for being with us. Brother Richard is just trying to... looking at the calendar for probably January to get your husband in. I told Sister Aife, Brother Richard, that you met her husband at the Locks Conference.
And I got all three of the books, and I've been going through them. Urban Philosophy, Thought and Behavior System, right. Urban Philosophy, Practice of the Urban Struggle, and Urban Philosophy, New African Revolutionary Vanguard. And yep. I'm really
Politics
impressed.
Politics of the Urban Struggle.
Right. I'm really impressed with what I'm reading. And it's interesting you do the study process that you mentioned, because as a ex-member of the ASCAT, the Association for the Study of Classical African Civilization, we try to institute that same process where we're, it's not just about reading and saying we accomplish it, but where the study group members would have to do presentations, which would give us an opportunity to build what Baba Jake said, the scholar base, and be able to expand the knowledge base based off of our ancient Kemetic system from the grassroots perspective, saying that our history is inladen within our, as Mama Frances Cress Wellson said, within our, even our DNA structure. So I'm glad to hear that y'all are implementing that process as a study process, because I think that that's the way we should go to reemphasize or redevelop or continue the African society that was one of the most magnificent that we can be able to see in present day. So I'm glad to hear that.
Thank you.
Again, before you leave us, Sister Aife, give out that address again, and give out any contacts. Will somebody reach you if they're in the Baltimore area, or if, even if they're not, how they can reach you, get involved in the organization, get your books. The floor is yours.
Sure. The event tomorrow, Wake Up and Rise Up Sisters, 4th Annual Women's Conference, will be held at Center for Urban Families, 2201 North Monroe Street in Baltimore, Maryland. We are not taking anyone at the door. If you're still interested in attending and you did not pay by now your registration fee, you can still do that. Just call me or text me at 443-839-6926 or inbox me on Facebook. And my name is Ife Fatio on Facebook. Or you can go to the page on Facebook, Wake Up and Rise Up Sisters. If you're interested in my book, Wake Up and Rise Up Sisters, The Voice of a Black Woman, the cost is $12. You can contact me at that number that I mentioned, or you can inbox me at Ife Fatio on Facebook for the book, or you can go to Amazon if that's easier for you. And then there's also local locations in Baltimore that is selling a book, and then you have Wally Mobaruti that sells it in Atlanta. I have various DVDs on different topics. There is a soundtrack to Wake Up and Rise Up Sisters. It's not a CD. It's a DVD soundtrack. So it's a little different. I'm giving you a visual as well as audio. And I'm also in the DVD doing poetry. So it's not singing, not rapping. It's myself and Sister Harmony Davis, who will be one of the presenters at tomorrow's workshop, doing poetry as it relates to African women on the soundtrack.
Okay, Sister Aife, I want to thank you for being with us. Thank you for your work. You have my email address, so anytime you want to give out any information, just let me know, email it to me, and we'll pass it along on Time for an Awakening. I tell Mama Kosowa that I'll talk to her soon when you see her tomorrow.
Will do.
And I want to thank you for being with us.
Take care,
thank
now.
Thank you so much for this opportunity. Y'all have a good night.
You too.
You too.
Okay.
We'll be right back. We'll go into open forum. You can get involved in the conversation by dialing 215-490-9832. That's 215-490-9832. We'll be right back to transition into open forum.
You are listening to Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasts or live programming, hit them up at timeforanawakening.com.
All Insurance Incorporated, an African-American owned and operated insurance agency in business for over 20 years, located at 231 Southeastern Road in Glenside, PA, with other offices in Germantown and West Philadelphia. Call now for commercial insurance quotes, homeowners insurance quotes, automobile insurance quotes, notary and tax services, representing over 15 major A-rated insurance companies, offering a discount on all notary services when you call in for a free quote. Call this number, 215-885-2444. That number is 215-885-2444. 215-885-2444. All Insurance Incorporated.
Before your roof becomes unruly, call Dooley. Dooley Brothers, specializing in shingle, rubber roofs, gutters, downspouts, and vinyl sidings. Call for your free estimate today. 215-224-3882. That's 215-224-3882. Dooley Brothers Roofing, the roofing experts you can trust. That number again, 215-224-3882. 215-224-3882. Before your roof becomes unruly, call Dooley.
RG Electrical Inspections provides electrical inspections for realtors, licensed electricians, and homeowners. Licensed and insured underwriter, serving Philadelphia and surrounding area. Call today, 484-268-9837.
What is in 1 million brothers and sisters who are tired of the same old rhetoric, the same old leaders, the same old ways of dealing with political and economic empowerment? If you realize that nobody's going to save black people but us, if you understand that no existing political party prioritizes the best interests of African Americans as a collective, if you believe that leadership is as leadership does, and this means that the best leaders for the black collective must come from the ranks of those who place and hold the best interests of black people foremost and uttermost, if you understand that black people must develop the mindset and the will to finance their own racial uplift organizational efforts, then get involved with 1 million conscious black voters and contributors. The movement is now. Go to www.iamoneofthemillion.com. That's www.iamoneofthemillion.com.
Hey, yeah, we're the same brothers from a long time ago. We was talking about television and doing it on the radio. What we did was to help our generation realize they got to get out there and get busy because it wasn't going to be televised. We got respect for your rappers and the way they freeway in. But if you're going to be teaching folks things, be sure you know what you're saying. Older folks in our neighborhood got plenty of know-how. Remember, if it wasn't for them, we wouldn't be out there now. And I ain't coming at you with no disrespect. All I'm saying is that you damn well got to be correct. Because if you're going to be speaking for a whole generation, and you know enough to try and handle their education, be sure you know the real deal about past situations and ain't just repeating what you heard on a local TV station. Sometimes they tell lies and put them in a truthful disguise. But the truth is, that's why we said it wouldn't be televised. They don't know what to say to our young folks, but they know that you do. And if they really knew the truth, why would they tell you? The first sign is peace. Tell all them gun-toting young brothers that the man is glad to see us out there killing one another. We raised too much hell when they were shooting us down, so they started poisoning our minds and trying to jerk us all around. And then they tell us they got to come in and control our situation. They want half of us on dope and the other half in incarceration. If the ones they want dead ain't killed by what they instigated, they can put some dope on the brother's body and claim it was drug-related. Tell them drug-related means there don't need to be no investigation, or at least that's the way they're gonna play it on the local TV station. All your 9mm brothers, give them something to think about. Tell them you heard that this is the new word. They got to work that stuff out. But somehow they feel in the wrong way with a gun in their hands. They feel real independent, but they just pulling contracts with a man. 5 and 5 will tell you it's hopeless out there on the avenue, but if they really knew the truth, why would they tell you? And if they look at you like you're insane and they start calling you scarecrow and say you ain't got no brain, or start telling folks that you suddenly gone lame, or that white folks have finally clocked your game, or worse yet, implying that you don't really know. That's the same thing they said about us a long time ago. Young rappers, one more suggestion before I get out of your way. But I appreciate the respect you give me and what you got to say. I'm saying protect your community and spread that respect around. Tell brothers and sisters they got to calm that bullshit down. Because we're terrorizing our old folks and we brought fear into our homes. And they ain't got to hang out with the senior citizens. Just tell them, damn it, leave the old folks alone. And we know who ripping off the neighborhood. Tell them that BS has got to stop. Tell them you're sorry they can't handle it out there, but they got to take the crime off the block. And they look at you like they think you're insane, or start calling you scarecrow thinking you ain't got no brain, or start telling folks that you suddenly gone lame, or that white folks have suddenly co-opted your game, or worse yet, saying that you really don't know. That's the same thing they said about me a long time ago. And if they tell folks that you finally lost your nerve, that's the same thing they said about us when we said Johannesburg. But I think you young folks need to know that things don't go both ways. You can't talk respect on every other song or just every other day. What I'm speaking on now is the raps about the women folks. On one song, she's your African queen, and on the next one, she's a joke. And you ain't said no words that I haven't heard, but that ain't no compliment. It only insults 8 people out of 10 and questions your intelligence. 4-letter words or 4-syllable words won't make you a poet. It will only magnify how shallow you are and let everybody know it. And if they look at you like they think you're insane, or they call you scarecrow thinking you ain't got no brain, or start telling folks that you suddenly gone lame, or that the white folks have finally co-opted your game, or you really don't know, they said that about me a long time ago. If they finally start telling people that you lost your nerve, that's what they said about Johannesburg. You ain't insane. You have got a brain. You haven't gone lame. You have got your game. Remember, keep the nerve. Keep the nerve. Keep the nerve. Keep the nerve.
Welcome back to Time for an Awakening. We're in open forum. You can give us a call, get involved in the conversation. I want to thank Sister Aife Fatu that was with us earlier to tell us about the Women's Conference slated for tomorrow. In Baltimore, Maryland, at 12 noon to 7 p.m., the Wake Up, Rise Up Sisters, 4th Annual Sisters Women Sisters Conference in Baltimore. Richard, interesting conversation with Sister Aife and the sessions that they have on the weekends. Richard?
Yeah, I'm here.
Oh, okay. The sessions that they have on the weekends, the critical thinking classes, all of those things are things we talk about on this program. And, you know, I like to hear when people come on the air and talk about things they're doing in their respective cities, because that only reaffirms the things that we constantly say, at least on Time for Awakening, that these things are going on in every right. city where we live. A lot of times we just don't have the information or don't know that these things are taking place. But, you know, when we have guests to come on and talk about not things that they want to do, not things that somebody else should be doing and they're not even doing, when they come on and talk about things they're doing and people are attending, whether it's one people or 20 people that people are attending, then that shows you that it's work going on. And if it's some work going on, then, you know, in somebody's particular area, then they can join in. If they don't want to join in, then start one of their own.
That's the powerful, both of those are the powerful, important points, you know, because these are small islands that are being developed. And in their case, you can see it's a different, a younger generation, right, that is expanding. In doing that, I mean, you heard that they got the daycare, the study group, the whole conference for women, and you know, which hopefully we will get Brother Imhotep on, where they started the, I believe they started the restaurant business or in a house and then moved, grown to where they've created a business. That community development, that organizational development, and you see them lay out the philosophy and the politics and the organizational development in the books that they're writing. She's writing to the women. He's writing to men. They're cultivating, you know, members of the community. These are things that we should keep an eye on and support. Not, as you say, just say that they don't exist, because those become the formations of the future. Hmm. And they need support.
Yeah.
You know, compared to, we're going to wait and see you if you get big and then try to lack on, they're important, so we're important. No, this is a communal effort. You know, that's what you're saying. This is a communal effort. It's not, this is a complementary effort. This is not a big I and a little you, and all you do is watch and, you know, pay them, you know, to do something. You can participate. We can participate. I think that that's the lesson I'm learning. You know, in the guests and the situations, as you explained, coming to, you know, Time for Awakening, because all these things we have to support in order for them to grow.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. Again, you know, for the time remaining, we're in open forum. It's Friday, and we're kind of in a freestyle mode. Anybody got anything they want to throw in the pot or put on the table? You can give us a call at 215-490-9832. That's 215-490-9832. A couple of things, Richard, I want to throw out there that was in the news this week. Oprah Winfrey made a deal, a $70 million deal with Discovery to sell her majority interest in that TV station that she has to own. They paid $70 million for 24.5% shares. They had already owned some shares of the station before that. But with the addition of the 24.5% shares, that pushes their ownership of the station to 70%, which means that the station is not black-owned anymore.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And they are allowing her to continue as CEO until 2025. So, you know, we see, you know, listen, I can't tell people what to do with that money. But, you know, we see the difference, Richard, and this is just me, between black people with a capitalist, Eurocentric mentality and black people with a vision for something black-owned and sustained. You know, when she first started that network, you could see that she had a different approach, because when she came off of television, it was, even though black women kind of followed the show, I guess she believed her core audience was white soccer moms. Mm-hmm. Because when the networks first start airing, you had Dr. Phil and Susie Orman. I mean, it was a bunch of white folks on there with talk programs, and it didn't work. Evidently, she was losing money, because then she started incorporating all these other shows. She scrapped that model that she had and went to all these shows, Sweetie Pies and, you know, all these other shows. And then brought Tyler Perry in with her, and they started developing all these other storylines. So, and now she's selling it. So, you know, what vision do they really have besides making money? She's a billionaire. So, you know, I guess more money, however you want to put it. I don't, you know, when is enough enough?
And, you know, and the other side to it, Elliot, you know, in this here, because one thing on the point that you're making in relationship to, do they have, what is the, I'm always confused, you know, from the perspective of the black capitalist thing that's going on, right? because it says, does it say, what's that, $70 million?
Mm-hmm.
You know, and okay, yes, I'll accept. There's not many African-Americans that's out there with large sums, supposedly. I don't, you know, I can't put my mind around it, because on one hand, we talk about the entertainers and what money they have, right, and the contracts they have and what they don't do. And I understand their lifestyle may be able to absorb that. But then it's these other guys that are in these corporate 500s now that are, in some cases, getting these mega bucks. And then people that we don't know. No, they don't make the Forbes list. But they don't have an idea. They're not networking and communicating with each other to create a cooperative to be able to buy those shares. It within the a quote unquote, even if it's symbolic, a black owned social economic reality. That part I can't understand. To where these other companies, white companies, a lot of times you don't even hear about the people. Yes, they buy and sell within. I mean, they got with the thing of hostile takeovers and all that. It's mostly white men. You know, buying and selling these companies, Yahoo or whatever they may be, or Google might be absorbing all these little companies so they won't be competitive against them. But they're white on white. You never hear no black person. Is it that there, even if the number is small, that there is no way to consolidate funds going to African country or an African wealthy person, a South American country, a South American, Colombian, Venezuelan person who has money, and then make deals in order to buy these. It's the only natural solution, even if they want to just get the money, is to sell it back to the person that would have made the company anyway.
I know.
It might not have had the program, but would have made the company anyway.
I mean, you're trying to, I assume the reason she started this company, because there was no black-owned media out there. And you turn around and give it right back into the hands of the reason you started it in the first place. I don't understand that type of
Bob
thinking.
Bob Johnson.
He did the same thing. Exactly. He did the same thing.
P. Diddy. With a clothing line. Same thing. I mean, it's something that, and the only reason why I'll admit my stupidity, if not ignorance, because I just, I hear on, yes, at the quote unquote lower end of the black social economic level, that there is no wealth, no income, that we have middle, or lower. But then didn't we just see that these supposedly executives are supposed to be putting together a fund so that they can be able to create a lobby for political purposes? I mean, they couldn't negotiate. I mean, they're supposed to have these skills.
Yeah. Well, some people don't seek that out, though, Richard. They don't seek. Listen, I don't care whether you got money. Some of our people still think that white folks' ice is colder and their sugar sweeter. Listen, this woman, and I'm just using her as an example, she's a billionaire. So why would her, you know, when she got a job on 60 Minutes after that Andy Rooney, one of them died, and she went on there. I think she's on there now. I haven't watched 60 Minutes in years. But in a statement, she said that that's something she always desired, to be on 60 Minutes. So you're on a network, I think 60 Minutes is owned by CBS. You go back and take a network job when you own a network. You're a billionaire and you own a network. If you want some type of news magazine show like 60 Minutes is, if you own your own network, then you start your own. Then you can be the CEO of your own news show. Why is your desire to be on 60 Minutes with five other white folks talking about news? I mean, what the hell? I don't understand that. Well, I understand that thinking clearly, but I'm just saying, you know, I'm scratching my head because sometimes these people that tout themselves and say, come on here. Come on.
And does that make the aspiring young people who supposedly supposed to be looking at this capitalist process? And I think it's important that we say that because there is the cooperative process, right, where you do search out those with like minds to put together these to buy these assets, whether they are land, whether they're you know, teams, what, you know, so that they, that everybody can be engaged in it, and you have, you create that, you continue to develop that social capital along with the wealth within this here capitalist system. But what do it says to those who, young people, whether they on the street or in the suite, who's looking at the Oprahs of the world and saying, I want to be like that. And have that some level of consciousness in the sense that because black people need to have that. What does that do to them when it gets flipped back? Isn't that educating them that this is what you're supposed to do? Get it to a certain level and then sell it off to the same people who you know is doing all of this here, segregating and not diversifying and not investing.
I know it. Now all of a sudden, is that dynamic going to change now that they've brought her network? Come on, man. I don't understand some of these people, Richard. Mm. You know, it's another story that's kind of related to that. And let me just read it because it's only a couple paragraphs. TV One cancels Roland Martin's morning show. The TV One is canceling Roland Martin's morning News One Now due to budget cuts. They called a meeting on Wednesday and told the staff that they were canceling the show. They're having significant financial problems, and they've had to scale back, a source said. After 4 years of award-winning programming and distinguished service to our viewers as the only black daily newscast on television, the network has made the difficult decision to suspend the production of News One Now as a daily morning news show. The last live show is scheduled for December 21st. TV One's interim GM wrote in a memo, the news shocked staffers, including Martin, as the network just expanded the morning show to 2 hours in September. So now you have the only other network that was black. I think TV One, Radio One, is not majority black owned anymore. White's owned. TV One, I think, is still majority black owned by Kathy Hughes. Mm-hmm. But we see that they're cutting the Roland Martin show. Now, listen, I'm no big Roland Martin fan, but it's not about Roland Martin. I think it's about the advent of having a news and information show that's directed towards African Americans canceled. Mm-hmm. And it's the only one on this television. So where are you going to get your news and information from? Glenn Beck, Sean Hannity, all these white folks that put their slant on the news or tell stories that's not accurate or fake mm-hmm. news, as this president liked to use that term. That's all they've been giving black folks is fake news. But, you know, how do you cut? Now, I think that network has a bunch of shows. Save My Life, Yamla, Save My Life, and all these other shows. You don't cut those shows, but you cut a news and information show that our people are lacking. That's one of the things our people are lacking. You know, I quote that thing in the beginning of the programs that our people are destroyed for the lack of knowledge. If our people don't have the proper information, then they can't make the proper decisions on things. They don't know. They don't have the information. So you're going to cancel a news and information program because of budget cuts. But if I turn that station on now, I bet you I see some crap on there. I don't understand some of these people's motives. If it's not about money, what is it? You can't cut some other programs that don't mean a damn thing. Women fighting, calling one another out their name. I'm quite sure they had them type of shows on there. If I'm wrong, and I'm wrong, somebody can correct me. But you can't cut all those type of silly type of shows. You're going to cut a news and information show? And believe me, I'm not touting Roland Martin because it's not about him. If Richard had the show on there and they canceled it, I'm talking about canceling a news and information show. It's the only one on TV that's black.
Which brings in black commentators, black guests.
Exactly.
In fact, the last time I saw the show, Richard,
Umar was on there. What other show, TV, going to bring Umar Johnson on there? None.
That perspective. I got a comment said that, well, you know, dealing with Oprah, well, maybe Discovery had first rights, but I find symbolically it's interesting when the show that, and I don't watch much television, Elliot, but I was down with Underground. Is that what they, yeah, I think it was Underground. I was down with it. And a station bought out the station and then cut the program. And it was scrambling around who was going to buy it. And they thought Oprah would be the best fit, but she said she couldn't afford the production. And now she's gone, and we don't know what the production is going to be now that Discovery has the channel, as you said. The shift from the Dr. Phil to having more of the black situated, I guess it would be drama and comedy programmings, to now with the rights around with Discovery to what kind of programs will come through. But as you said, and at the same time, toting that there's a lot of black programs on TV now, you know. At first, it was the big thing was Empire. You know, I don't know what we get, but for information, as you said, nothing. I mean, it might be some individuals, but not no network that or program that is providing where the whole black panel is black. And I think it came to one of the females that was a professor. She got axed, and I can't think of her name right now, that she had to write a letter about she was doing news commentary as a black host, and it was cut.
Yeah, well, we see that Trump is said that he's going to recognize Jerusalem as the capital of Israel. We can talk about some things. Let's bring up the call in that's been waiting. 646. Let's go to 646. Hey, brother.
Hey, brother Elliot and brother Richie. Listen, yeah. Why do y'all think Oprah is a billionaire if she's selling 25% interest of a television station for $70 million? That don't sound like a billionaire move. That sounds like somebody in need of some cash.
It does sound a little strange because $70 million to a, you know, like, huh? To a billionaire, and you're selling something for $70 million? I'm glad you raised that because I did kind of scratch my head. You know, I'm not into all that finance and all that stuff. I don't, you know, but it does. The figure seems a little low.
That don't sound too right to me. Now, number two, in regards to our boy Roland, from what I've been hearing from a source of mine, man, you know, Kathy Hughes and them are in some financial debt, man, that, you know, the Urugu may be calling in the marker on that company, and they may take control of it. You know, from what my boy was telling me, that the marker may be called in around March of next year, and they may take control of it financially.
Well,
he may not be the head Negro in charge no more. Now, I said that on Carl Nelson's show, and he said, oh, no, that's not true. You know what I mean? Like, really, he would know. But maybe he do know, you know, because he's had a long-standing career with her. And, you know, it may happen, and it may not happen. But the reality is this. I know it was shocking to Roland. I could tell by basically the response that he had on Twitter, and how long it took for him to even drop the bombshell on Twitter, because he's the type of Negro, he'll drop a bombshell at the drop of the hat. So I know that caught him off guard. But, you know, the funny thing is, when you look at it and you analyze it, why would you give him 2 months ago an extra hour, and on top of that, put some Negro women on, and then take him off instead of cutting him back down to an hour and maybe getting rid of the Negro women?
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? But you,
I mean,
listen,
I agree with you.
You keep the Negro women. That sounds a little kind of crazy to me, because them witches ain't really saying nothing too tough, as far as I'm concerned. I've never watched that show, but I DVR Roland's show. Now, I have issues with Roland, but I can say this. He do put forward information that our community needs to hear.
Oh, yeah, that's what I'm talking about. Because, you know, when I put it on social media, I got some response like, who cares about Roland Martin? But see, people miss the boat sometimes. I didn't put it on there because I was talking about having some. I'm just saying it. I'm having sympathy for Roland Martin. It's not about that. I'm talking about the fact of news and information. It could be Jay was the host. If they cut a news and information program that's directed towards black folks, that's the only one on television, and you cut it because of budget concerns, but you keep other crap on, then what's your objective? What are you doing?
Yeah, but what is your purpose that you really serve in regards to the community?
Exactly.
Because the reality is we need as much information as we could get as a people, because, you know, the white boy, he's not playing no games when it comes down to information.
Oh, I know.
He has an agenda that he has to put forth to keep us dumb, deaf, and blind. You know what I mean? So, you know, that's just the way it is. You know, I mean, let's be honest. Let's try and be honest about it. It is what it is, you know? Now, also, one has to think about what direction do we now go in regards to media as far as black people are concerned in this country. Because if you don't have a show that's putting forward your information, and now the narrative is going to be on Sunday, you got Perm Daddy Al Sharpton as your lead information source, like Roland used to be on TV One on Sunday, that's dangerous as hell. Because that non-speaking Perm Daddy Negro, you know, it's amazing, in all truthfulness, you know that Negro is on the television or the radio every day of the week. There's not a day that Negro take off. That's dangerous.
But I don't listen to him, but I'm going to react and say the assumption is, and I think that your question is critical. I mean, both of which y'all are raising is critical. I think the thing now is to create a information blackout as it relates to black people.
Oh, certainly. And I think that's always been the agenda.
And as you start to raise, Elliot, with the you know, the whole thing with the Jerusalem thing, and you know the thing about, as you say, Jay, with the tax thing, it's, you know, we're in a boilerplate right now. So we're not going to get any. And I don't know who really listens to, because all the feedback I get is that no one really pays attention to, what's his name, Sharpton anymore. I mean, he's like, what you call him? What's the congressman?
He has a core following that basically feeds into his BS on a constant and a continuous basis, because they just all caught up. It's like, I'll give you a perfect example of what's going on right now in regards to this whole narrative with this character, Roy Moore, in Atlanta. You know, seriously, we as black people suffer from a deep, deep sickness of having to always come for some reason to rescue the daddy. But the daddy never, ever, ever gives us anything in return for trying to rescue his white ass. Now think about this. Now seriously, we really got to think about this. They are trying to make it seem as though we are the margin. If we come out in record numbers in Alabama, to keep that cracker out of office. But the thing that nobody wants to really talk about or discuss is that the Cracker Jones don't want to do nothing in regards to bringing black folks out. He just wants his segregated Negro to just tell black folks come out.
Mm-hmm.
He don't want to put no advertisement out. He don't want to put no money into the ground troops. He don't want to do anything. He don't want to be seen in the black church. He don't want to be seen at all around the Negroes. He don't want to do the necessary thing to make it seem that he's courting black folks. But he wants black folks, and he needs black folks desperately. But the Negro, instead of understanding that they're in a position to get something in return from that filthy, no good cracker, they just willingly go along because they have some sort of fear of Moore. Like, Moore is really, really going to do something to hurt black folks that ain't already been done to us.
But
do you understand the sickness that we suffer from?
Is that the same? And what you raised, could that be the same as Sharpton, that the ones who do are getting paid, like Sharpton's getting paid? And as you said, Sharpton has a small echo chamber of a base. Now, I don't believe, I mean, you may correct me if I'm wrong, I don't believe it's big. You know, I don't believe that a lot of people are holding on. I believe Roland Martin probably had a larger, and I don't listen to either one, but based off of the feedback, Roland Martin had a larger listening base than Sharpton. But Sharpton, as you say, is on. They're paying him 7 days a week. So he's not just on, he's getting paid. And could that be the same thing with Moore? That whoever is going to support him, they are not looking for a lot of black people to come out, because they know what he's about.
Moore's not even concerned at all about the turnout of black people. Truly.
That's what I'm saying. But it's important to have the symbol. It's still important to have a symbol, especially now. Just like Trump did when he invited those Negro college what they call them, presidents, and then his Miss Ann, she laid up on the couch
with her feet up.
Shoes off.
It's just the sickness of it, man, that's so disturbing that we just go along with it on the level that we do, and we never question it on any type of level whatsoever. It's like we never try to make them accountable to us for our supposed vote. You know, I mean, the reality is, what do we ever get from these crackers in the first place for our vote? I mean, I really would like to know.
And Jay, in accordance with what you're saying, and then here's that other mentality of people making side deals. Now, Roy Moore went into a black church. He addressed a black church. What was it, last Sunday?
Mm-hmm.
I think it was last Sunday he went into a black church.
Mm-hmm.
Now, it's obvious that the pastor of that black church got some type of side arrangement if this clown wins. You know, it should be about the community and what's best for the community, not, oh, I'm going to make a deal for my church. And it ain't even about his church. It's about him, because the church ain't going to get no benefit. If you poor and a member of that church, you're going to be poor tomorrow. You're going to be poor if Roy Moore or the other guy wins. You're still going to be poor. That church ain't going to look out for him.
But you know, Elliot, what the funny thing is, and this is the thing that I don't think people really, really understand about what's going on with this. And this is why I get a kick out of Al Franken and the way that he played the game, because I think Al Franken played the game the best way to keep it on a level to where, as you know, that old saying, S on the pot or get off. I believe what's going to happen is Moore is going to win. I believe once Moore's win, that the Senate may not confirm him, and that if they do confirm him, it's going to be a little bit of fight back, or there may not be a fight back. And if it does, Franken is going to say, I'm not leaving. But what's really going to cause a problem with that is, from what I'm hearing, is there's so many other senators and congressmen that got allegations about to come out against them in the culture in Washington, that it's just absolutely madness going on. You see what I'm saying? So whereby, if they don't confirm Moore as senator, then the game that they've been playing and manipulating from the start is, okay, now the governor of Alabama will appoint a Republican. That was the game that was being played from the beginning. But because Negroes are not chess players, they don't understand it. So if they were real chess players, they would have went all out and did whatever they had to do.
But Jones elected.
They don't give a damn because if we lose, we was going to lose anyway.
I think what you're raising, though, is the question, or what I would superimpose on what you're raising in relationship to being the chess player. See, because I, you know, over the last week or so, I've been raising the question, Jay, who is the national administrative bureaucracy for black people in America?
In regards to what?
Let's just use the realm of politics. Who sits on, because when we look at those white Southerners and say in Alabama, who would put more back in, who would challenge those senators, congresspeople in that sitting, Republicans that are sitting, there's people at that level that is administering that to even have him run or tell him that he can still win. Why? Because they've been cultivating that population on the ground through the entertainment, through the information, through the political education, that he should be able to sit in that seat.
And it would probably have to be the party. It would probably have to be the Republican Party.
I mean, but that's
what it would have to be.
Right, and
it would have to be the Democratic Party.
Right, and that's what. But we know that the Democratic Party, at the administrative level, at the lower level, because that's the fight within the Democratic Party right now, is the Democratic Party hasn't given its natural base any resources. Black people are the Democratic Party's natural base. At the local level, they have not financed any. Now they financed the suburban. The whites, that was the major tension about how they lost to Trump.
that they never, the black infrastructure within the Democratic Party said, why didn't you court your natural base instead of courting that suburban middle-class white community, trying to convince them to come out compared to the people that you knew? You didn't put no money in into the organizers in the black community to get out the
vote.
Yeah,
but that, you know, listen, they don't have to, Richard, because they'll just use the same formula they're using down there in Alabama. They used it here in Philadelphia when that when Wolf ran against the Republican. I forgot who was the guy that lost Corbin, that seat. Corbin. He didn't put no money in Philadelphia, and that's where a lot of the votes come from.
That the thing is that the black vote, because of that, other than because Obama was a natural, right?
And he didn't spend no money in the community.
They didn't have to put no money out for Obama. The sentiment, it was like a rock star. They felt like we had to support. They had that. They got that twice. They got 98% of the turnout twice. But
and he ain't had to spend no
else,
money.
They would have had to convince black people. And if they, in order to convince them, they would have had to put some money in their hand. And
no, that's not true. That's not true. Because no, you cannot tell me or give me any time that the DNC has ever put money in the hands of black for any type of turnout in the black community. I can't think of when they have ever given money to blacks for a massive turnout. They didn't do it for Obama. They didn't do it for nobody that I can think of. I mean, put into context what just happened in Atlanta.
Think about it.
Jay,
didn't do it because they didn't have to. Of course, ever since 72, they've been getting the run of black mayors in places where black mayors hadn't been, or run of black city council places, persons in places where black city councils haven't been, and the natural constituency base would have came not because they you had to convince them by policy or by buying. You had they came because they wanted to have a black person in that seat.
The Negro just comes willingly to the Democratic Party with no purpose, no understanding of or no expectation whatsoever.
They just
feel as though they got a Democrat in office and you're gonna get some sort of crumb. You can't even. I mean, think about this. Think about how deep it is. A white woman, a so-called Republican who masqueraded herself
as independent.
A so-called independent Democrat, almost became the mayor of Atlanta if it wasn't because of 700 people. And that was only a representation, from my understanding, of 23% of the voting population of Atlanta. Now, do you know how deep that is?
That's the point I'm making, Jay. That's the point I'm making, because all along the black participation rate, when you look at the numbers, has been decreasing. It hasn't been increasing. And at the same time, the black elected officials this generation of black and elected officials, especially, you know, Obama was which we say all the time, these guys, this is a job. They are not representing black people. And black people at the grassroots levels who are card-carrying Democrats, though they're card-carrying Democrats, they realize that guy, that even though he black compared to the Maynards, compared to the, Coleman, compared, you know, what's the mayor of D.C., you know, they, Marion Barry, compared to, or the one from Chicago that passed. Those guys, they felt that they were the natural leaders of black people who were a part of the Democratic Party, and they came out for them. But this generation, they know they just trying to get paid. So the participation rate.
What do you mean getting paid? Who's getting paid now?
It's a job. That job is a more secure job. Even if they only do their term, they walk away with a pension.
Here, black people got to work
30, 40 years. If they get a job with they got to work 30, 40 years to get a pension.
But think about
These jobs come in and they leave and they got a pension. Huh?
But think about this, though, Richard. The cats in Atlanta that really got paid were the old guards. Think about all of those Negroes that were part of the Martin Luther King era that lived. All of them are millionaires. Think about that.
All of those Negroes
are millionaires. And the question is, what do black folks have to show for the civil rights movement? What do we honestly have to show?
Jay, I'm glad you mentioned that, because for all the criticism that King has taken for his stance on for his strategy on during the civil rights movement, for all the criticism King has taken, and then basically lost his life.
Right.
What do you think that he would think about the people that work with him if he could see it now? See the people still in the same situation that they was in when he was murdered, and see all of those guys that he worked with as millionaires or close to it. What do you think that he would say?
He would be. I would hope he would be mad as hell.
I think he would be.
In all honesty, if you listen to what he was talking about in the last year or two of his life, and you see how he metamorphosed into what he was when he died, oh, man, he would be mad as hell.
I know it.
He would have to be, because basically what they did after he died was just position themselves to be the gatekeeper of his supposed legacy and feed off of it and make themselves rich, and if all truth be told, didn't even take care of his wife and kids.
But let me just make this point.
His wife and kids later on had to fend for themselves. You understand? That's why I never got too mad with Dexter being the greedy bastard that he is in regards to his daddy's legacy trying to get paid. Because I think he really understood and he saw how all of the individuals that surrounded his daddy had became very rich men, and how his family struggled for years and on a certain level had to take handouts. And when he was able to get into the position to enjoy the luxuries of Negropeanism, he had to go for it. So that's why I never had a problem. But if the truth be told, all of those Negroes that surround the king live far better lives than we do.
I can't think of one that doesn't.
I wouldn't disagree with that. But let's put it in the context of they had the same choice that King had and Malcolm had. Because they had the choice either, which we're talking about even when we look at Sharpton, you either take the money or we take your life. But you're not going to take the people and have them come up against us. And that's, as you say, Elliot, that's the deal behind the closed doors. You either take the money or we take your life. And they were.
I tell you this. Somebody alive tell you, well, Farrakhan didn't do it.
and to a degree, you know, I mean, even to this last press conference, he raised the point of how that. I mean, He did. Because with that, I mean, and I'm only dealing with the symbolic of it as far as the information at that point in time, and I keep using that. That Libyan deal, when they took the State Department said, don't go, you know, he didn't go. When that whole thing of when Jesse was running and they said, back up off of Jesse, he backed up. So you have to, as you say, in playing the chess game, the question is, you know, do you want to play, do you move to play longer or do you move to be checkmated now?
Hey, Richie, nobody want to die, bro. Everybody want to live forever, but you know something? There are some men, I believe, that understand that they have to die because of circumstance, and I truly believe that Martin Luther King and Malcolm X were those kind of men. I think I truly believe that Malcolm knew he was out of here, and I think King knew that he was out of here, and they did the supreme sacrifice for us as a people by continuously to be committed.
I respect
the fact that King could have really did some different things, but he didn't, man. And as I've gotten older and I've read more of his stuff and I've listened to more of his stuff, I kind of realized, man, King wasn't as bad as a lot of us make him out to be when you put things into context today, because, you know, the most craziest thing is 50 years from the time that King has died, the conditions are basically the same.
That's the thing. The question is not necessarily about the exceptional people, because those people who were in the BLA, who were in SNCC, RAM, you know, those people that we don't even know their name, they got killed.
Right. Yep.
They got locked up.
They got guys in jail now that done did 40 and 50 years in a cage, man.
And they
40
were,
and 50 years. Ain't had a good meal in 40 and 50 years, bro. And you know what it's like not to have a good meal in 40 or 50 years, man?
But not to have a
good piece of fruit?
But what the question is, how farther along in organizing the communities that they came out to organize if they were left on the street? And to make the analysis of, as you say, 50 years later and not look at what the condition of the next generation of organizers that they touched, because as you came, Martin, they were young men. All of them guys that you're talking about, old now they got $1 million, but ain't nothing today. They were young men. 38, starting at 20.
Yeah, but if you look at history, Richard, in all honesty, would they have been able to organize the people, liberate themselves against the oppressor?
And
wait a minute. Say that again, Jay. I didn't catch that.
I said, if you look at history and the nature of the white man, will they really have been able to organize our people against the oppressor? I don't know. From my perspective, I truly believe that they wouldn't have been, because I think they would have been placed in the same position that they were placed in. I believe they would have either been killed, they'd have been in prison, or in all honesty, I believe that the community would have turned on them, especially when the community was placed in the position to whereas they were able to start to get some of the trinkets of integration, being able to work at certain jobs, able to have certain things. You know, that would have been, you know, the reason that caused so many problems that we have today, which leads to us not having community because we're so divided. You know what I mean? We're so scattered as a people that, you know, you have individuals like those Negroes out in Atlanta who could, you know, be black, supposedly be leaders, and go out there and say, as a black person, support and back this white woman. You know, as a black man, as a black woman, it ain't no way in hell I'm supposed to go in my community and ever say to them, support a white woman over a black woman or a black man. It's just not supposed to happen.
But I'm supposed
to be able to check her. But listen to the point, Richie, though.
Yeah,
the point is this. If the woman is out of line and I don't agree with her politics, I'm supposed to be able to take her into a room and check her before I'm in. This was a woman who was supposed to be a powerful so-called black leader that went out there and supported that white woman against her sister. That's the problem. You don't see too many white people doing that to their white brethren.
I think the first point that you made, and the thing is, that's where we need to look at history. And I think that if we look at 1870 to 1910, when at the grassroots level, at that second generation, they only thing that they had different than 1960 through 1950, but say 1960 to 1980, the only thing they had different is that they didn't have the strategy of that they were going to deal with armed conflict. They thought if they used, and that piece that you read, Elliot, where when the question was raised, how do you want to go? And they said, well, oh, we want to self-segregate ourselves. They didn't say we want to self-segregate and arm ourselves for what we think the backlash is going to be. They said we want to self-segregate ourselves and compete thinking that they compete economically. When you look at 1960, I mean, from the political part when SNCC and Kwame and them went down to Mississippi, Mississippi, up to even after Malcolm had said, to arm the urban or at least be self-defense ready in the urban area up to 1970 through the Panthers, that if that would have been in place, that was two different models that black people had, and black people were organizing at the grassroots level, then what you would have had you would have had in those areas, in those territories, looking at the context and contests like Israel and the Palestinians. Because you would have had infrastructure that would have said, you're not going, whether we had the arms or not, but you would have had the strategic thinking that we're going to protect our space, even if we don't have the military back armament that you have. What we don't have now is all we have now is individuals who stopped the state, took out all the organizers from the ground, as we said, locked them up or killed them, and left in place with a choice was individuals to say, now, what are you going to do? You either take the money and be a spokesperson because you don't organize the community. You don't educate the community. You use our medium and you come in front of the community.
Yeah, but Richard, that's kind of a stretch, bro, when you talk about Israel and Palestine, because Israel and Palestine is on a whole nother level, bro. That's like apartheid 101. You can't have apartheid in America no more after slavery.
You don't think this is apartheid? You don't think that? You don't think gentrification? You don't think that they come in and raise the value. They give you, they house you in places and don't give you access to income or wealth development tools. And give
it's not as physically. I understand exactly what you're saying, but it's not as physically brutal. It's not as physically brutal and restrictive the way it is over in Israel.
And I accept that. But the only thing I'm saying is we can't look at the intensity. We have to look at the structure. We're not looking at whether the car is blue, red, or orange. That. We're looking at whether it has a transmission, an engine, and four wheels. Because all of them got that.
Yeah, but we don't think like that as a people, though, Richard. We as a people don't see that type of structural brutality that we're honestly facing.
And wait a minute.
We don't even feel as though gentrification is that bad, if the truth be told. We feel if we can afford it, then we can live there. If we can't afford it, then get the hell out. That's the mindset of the Negro.
Well,
you know,
honestly, I agree.
Am I right or wrong, Elliot?
Well, I agree with you, Jay, that we don't look at it that way because the critical discussions is not being had among our people about the reality of our situation. When you and Richard was talking about this government killed black leaders, jailed, got a ton of political prisoners that's still in jail.
Right.
Decimated generations of black people because they didn't want what they considered a subversive mentality growing. That's diabolical. But black people, being that we don't understand or look at our situation critically, all that's on some black people's minds is thank you for your service. Or I want my children to go into the armed forces. Now, how does that work? This country has worked to basically decimate black people, but you don't mind serving for that same government?
Because we don't think this country is that brutal to black people.
That's my whole point.
We have certain liberties. But you know me and you can understand it. But the average person don't understand it. It's like me sitting down trying to explain that to one of my nieces and nephews that's a pure D Negro peen. You know, I'm trying to tell her. She's telling me she's gonna go and join a sorority. I mean, what am I gonna say to her? I mean, I'm looking at she get mad at me because I look at her like she's nuts. But now I could bust a bubble. But why am I gonna do that, man? You 18-year-old kid. You ain't ready. Now, I know if I had trained you and I had told you, well, you need to read, you need to do that, you've been exposed to certain cultural things, I know you would never do that because that thing is alienated to your culture. So, you know, that's the problem with our people. We don't seem to understand that we are under oppression, that we are being treated as cauliflower, that we are nothing but, you know, sorry to say it, trash to the European. We're just something that they use and they toy with to be able to keep their thing going. And the sad thing is, they don't only do it to us, they do it to their own. Because the reality is, and this is all truthfulness and sadness, is whenever you could pass a tax bill that they just passed and they are about to implement on this country that's going to not only affect me and you and our families, but are going to affect their people in the manner that it is, that just goes to tell you that they subhuman. They're not even human beings. But then again, you'll have people like the Sharptons and the rest of them tell us that we need to unite with one another against this so-called beast. That's the conflict that we as a people have. We always trying to go against the beast with someone else instead of saying, the hell with the beast, let's get our act together, unite with one another, and figure out how we're going to move forward as a people, grow and develop and do our thing. You understand? We always try to integrate.
But the critical question comes, can you do that in a capitalist system? Whether they do it or you try to do it, are you able in a capitalist system, using the game plan that they are using? Because that game plan says that it's only some of us is going to win. And the rest of y'all going to lose. Now, when we organize and get ourselves together, it ain't about who we're against. It's about, well, what is the system that we're going to use? And if we never get to that point of the critical question, because that gets into, because that's what this guy is saying, y'all can do whatever you want with what we give you. But the one thing you're not going to do is not play this game. And this game is that I use you. Spirit, mind, body, and soul. I use you for everything that you got for my benefit. Because that's the way I develop the game. Now, what happens is a certain group says, individuals say, well, I got a choice. Try to come up with another game and get everybody to play that, or I play that game. And if I play that game, then I got to do what they do. And we see that on the street. We call it the drug epidemic, we call it the criminal, taking advantage of black women and children for their self-interest. I mean, black people have playing that game. I mean, even to the point of, you know, using the model of Jay-Z and all of them guys.
But let me ask you this, Richard. What is the narrative now, honestly, from your perspective, of drugs when it comes down to black people? Are we in the equation anymore? Because to me, it doesn't even say that black people are honestly in the equation when it comes to drugs, to be truthful with you.
Yeah,
because it's always a discussion of the opiate. It's never anything other than that. So I always ask myself, are black people in this discussion of drugs?
Not technically, because our era is over. But the fear of white drugs and white people being on drugs, young white people being on drugs from the hills and the suburbs, is they got guns. They got access to guns. And when they get strung out and they say they can't get their drugs, they're going to go where the drugs is at. And the drug maker now is the company. It ain't going to be a country. The people who supplied the drugs to us, we sold the drugs to us, they got it from countries. These guys got it from companies. They're going to go to the companies.
But have we seen that? Have we seen that type of violence and interreaction yet?
Not yet.
Because my whole thing is this. My feeling is that you're going to see within the next 3 to 4 years, based on what's going on, if this tax bill go through, in my opinion, the Timothy McVeigh's of the world.
That's
I think. So are you going to say because of this drug epidemic, this opium epidemic, that's going to create the Timothy McVeigh's against drug manufacturing?
And look what the state is saying. We're giving the military armament at the local level, everywhere. They ain't giving it just in black communities.
That's true.
They're giving it everywhere. When they get started, knowing that they got guns, and they know how to go in. I mean, the boys here in Pennsylvania, I think it was Pennsylvania, Elliot Craig, he was in the woods for months, and they couldn't find him.
Yeah.
Months.
Yeah.
Well, they kind of knew where he was, but they just let him basically stay there. They kept him contained. They knew where he was at. but they didn't just rush in there after.
Just look at that. Look at that narrative. The narrative is because, you know, them white boys, they look at that and they fantasize about stuff like that. That's like the Rambo theory. You know what I mean?
Exactly.
You know how big Rambo was. You know, so I may be able to do the same thing. I mean, you know, if you think about it, from the place that we were 50 years ago to where we are today, and the direction that the country is going, I mean, we as a people better start figuring some things out, because in all honesty, man, it looks like we are about to start becoming extinct, man, because, you know, everything that's being done is not only against us, they're doing it against their own people. And the difference between their people and us is their people are extremely violent, and they have the weaponry to cause harm. And whenever you have somebody that's willing to cause harm, there's always a target. And the sad thing is, Negroes don't believe that they could really be the target from these white boys.
See,
but believe me, these white boys are training every day.
But they
in the they're doing their thing.
But your narrative always positions us. And I hear others say that just like when, I mean, because these white boys always been fighting like that. When they brought them Irish and whatever, they the ones that said, no, you not. You know, at some point, they said, no, you not. I mean, LA, you raised about the era of the Capone during the Gilded Age, they called it, when they had all the wealth. Them boys said, them Italians said, no, you not. We going to bust them banks. And they had to go and get boys that was just as vicious as them.
Yep.
That's why they brought Hoover in. Look, you create a team that is just as vicious as them. And they celebrate that today on movies.
That's it. That's it. So, like, you have Richard and Elliot, the brother that had the Black Gun Club.
Right.
You need to get him back on the air. Because, listen, we got to be in a position, I don't care what nobody say, to at some point in time be able to defend ourselves against this beast. Because, listen, man, he trying to survive. And it's going to be harder and harder to survive because, you know, the funny thing is, everybody be talking about, you know, your boy saying he bringing back jobs and he going to make America great and all of that. But when you really start looking on what has happened in the year that this character's been in office, what has he really done? And if you think about it, you know, when this tax thing goes through, I think that whole Wall Street bubble may burst, baby, because that's been what's been holding a lot of things up, is that Wall Street market, man, because he hasn't brought back no jobs. He hasn't done anything, and a whole bunch of people been speculating, the big boys have been speculating that he's going to be able to pull this tax thing through, because think about all of the money that has been spent on lobbying for this to happen. So if this don't happen, you're going to have some serious economic problems, and if it do happen, you're going to still have some serious economic problems down the road, because he hasn't brought back no manufacturing job. He hasn't, if the truth be told, and I don't know if people been listening, he hasn't changed no trade agreement. He hasn't even done no new trade agreement. The Alaskan pipeline that he did, nobody's talking about it, but they have had nothing but problems. I mean, they done already had Beacon Oil and all of that stuff. So, I mean, there's a lot of things going on that the media ain't even talking about that just got the country in a real funny position that nobody's looking at. And we just sitting back here talking about impeaching this fool and all of these things. And, man, games are happening to us and things are going on, and we talking about sexual harassment and all of this, And here it is. I'm at the point now, and I really feel this way. This is a manipulation of nothing but women trying to get power and dominance over men and change the paradigm of this country for women having control over men. This is payback, baby.
And will that mean anything different for us?
I gotta leave. I gotta leave on that note. But Richard, don't that sound kind of right to you?
If
you
think
about 40 some more congressmen are now talk about being exposed. And did you see what happened to the great mulatto,
Howard Ford
Jr.? Mm-hmm. How they banged him out on the allegation of somebody who wasn't even an employee at Morgan Stanley? Did you see him? So now think about all of the other congressmen. Hastings is about to get spanked too, and he done already paid money out for his shenanigans when he was a judge in Florida. So you know what his record is like, and all of the others, and all of the other people that allegations are going to come about. Man, women have finally been able to get men, and they don't even have to have concrete proof. All they got to do is open up their mouth and say that, damn, he did this to me without no proof at all. Show you how wicked it is, brother. Have a good night.
Jay, thanks for your call, man.
Richard. Hey. It's real. It's real.
I know it.
And I don't think this ain't going to be any different either.
Oh, most definitely. That still leaves our people in the same position.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Even though they'll use black women to push forth their agenda with this, they got a Time magazine cover, I think some type of cover with black women on it, talking about the, you know, I forgot the hashtag they use, I told or whatever they, you know, whatever mm-hmm. this thing is, they'll use black women, but black women and men will be still in the same position under this white supremacy system that mm-hmm. we live under.
Mm-hmm. It's
the
real.
Thing is, we have to develop strategies to free our people mentally and physically.
And like the guest we had on earlier, those formations, we have to be able to identify and recognize through history that as they're growing, they become listed. I mean, they become the ones that's put on that represents what that FBI list talks about. What they call black extremists.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so the question becomes on us who see this and watching them do the right thing, building the right thing. What do we have to put in place to protect it so it can grow? Because eventually, as you, the questions you were asking, you know, young people, in their case for this conference for her, black women are going to come. And they're going to go to those study groups or think in that think tank mode. And they're going to get that culture. And they're going to go to their male friends, their boyfriends, and their husbands. And they're going to redirect their behavior.
Yeah, so it's going to take root. If you have 20
but if
people,
we don't protect it. They'll take it out of here. Soon, wait to see how far it grows. Because they watching now, right?
Oh, certainly.
And that's the thing, you know. And on the other side, trying to keep it so nobody hear about it. If it ain't no venues like this, who hears about it? Only the reach they have.
Yeah,
gonna bring them on. Those he ain't there no more.
Those are the
Oprah ain't gonna have no TV show. She ain't got no TV show. She can't bring them on no more.
Yeah, those are the critical questions that have to be discussed, along with that critical question that we talked about last week. As much as people, or much as some folks might want to avoid the conversation, you've got to talk about people that do damage to our struggle. That's important. You got to talk about it.
And
you can't talk about it after the fact because the damage is done.
Right. And that pastor that Jay was talking about, what was it Jay or you was saying about that brought what you call him into that church? Would he fall into that criteria?
Oh, certainly. Certainly. The one of the practical solutions that those people could adopt is leaving that church immediately. Mm-hmm. But who knows whether they would. Mm-hmm. Because according to certain passages in Christianity, you're supposed to pray for your leaders and pray for people that despitefully use you and persecute you. So all of that stuff is involved in the narrative. In fact, if anybody objected to him coming to the church, I can imagine the passages in the Bible that he used to get them back in line.
Mm.
Yeah, so that, you know, all of that is part of those critical discussions that need to be had, man.
And we're having them, Elliot. I think, you know, it seemed like you raised that last week, and I think Jay raised, you know, an important point. We're having it, but you know, but we have to be having it all over.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, we come to a conclusion of another program. It was an interesting discussion, Richard. I like the open forums that we have, because even if we don't get enough callers calling in, it's a lot of people listening, so it's things on people's mind. They'll bring it up eventually, and then we'll have guests that'll bring these discussions up. So they won't be the last time that you hear these type of discussions being had. It's not a one-and-done type of situation, but it's something that we got to deal with.
Yes.
And we got to come up with strategies to deal with it. Or, and put it this way, implement strategies to deal with it, because the strategies is already here. We just got to implement them and figure out ways how we're going to implement them.
Yes, sir.
Tomorrow morning, Saturday Sports Talk with Troy Wilmore. That's 10 o'clock, 10 a.m. to 12 noon. SST, Saturday Sports Talk with Brother Troy Wilmore. On Sunday, at 11 to 1, 11 a.m. to 1 in the afternoon, Revive is back with Sister POC. Time for Awakening, Sunday evening at 7 o'clock. Starting the week again on Monday, you got Brother Oshi with African Perspectives, Mondays, Wednesdays, and Fridays from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. On Thursday at 8 o'clock, ULU, Us Lifting Us, an African-American Economic Empowerment Program. That's Thursday evening, 8 to 11 p.m. And like I said before, more shows coming very soon. I want to thank everybody for listening to the program this evening. Lively discussion, as always, and we'll be back on Sunday, Lord willing, to continue on this path towards an awakening. Peace.
Peace.
If you're driving through the country on a lazy afternoon, or you're watching your children playing after school, they seem to be so unaware of, I know, the things that they'll soon have to take care of. We've got to do something, to save the children. Such a small part of
little Tommy, he said he wants to be a fireman. And little Mary, she said she got to teach school. If we know all we say we know about the problem.
To save the children.